United. My depression began with an imaginary tick. For an hour, I stared at the mirror, waiting for my eyelid to flutter or the corner of my mouth to tingle. "Do you see my tick?" I asked my husband. "No." "Do you see my tick now?" I asked my husband. "No." "Do you see my tick now?" I asked my husband. "No." In my early 20s, I used to have an actual tick in my right eyelid that spread so that my right facial muscles contracted my eye into an occasional Popeye squint. I found out I had a rare neuromuscular condition called hemifacial spasm, triggered by two cranial nerves behind my ear that became twisted. In 2004, when I was 26 years old, a doctor in Pittsburgh corrected my spasms by inserting a tiny sponge to separate the two entwined nerves. Now, 7 years later, I was convinced my spasms had returned, that somehow the sponge had slipped and my nerves had knotted themselves up again. My face was no longer my face, but a mask of trembling nerves threatening to mutiny. There was a glitch in the machine. Any second, a nerve could misfire and spasm like a snaking hose hissing water. I thought about my face so much I could feel my nerves, and my nerves felt ticklish. The face is the most naked part of ourselves, but we don't realize it until the face is somehow injured, and then all we think of is its naked condition. My self-conscious habits returned. I found elaborate ruses to hide my face in public, cradling my cheek against my hand as if I were in constant dismay or looking away to quietly ponder a question about the weather, when all I could think of was my ticklish nerves that could, any second, seize my face into a tick. There was no tick. It was my mind threatening mutiny. I was turning paranoid, obsessive. I wanted someone to unscrew my head and screw on a less neurotic head. "Stinking thinking," my husband called my thinking. To try to fall asleep, I ingested whiskey, then whiskey with Ambien, then whiskey with Ambien, Xanax, and weed, but nothing could make me sleep. When I could not sleep, I could not think. When I could not think, I could not write, nor could I socialize and carry on a conversation. I was a child again, the child who could not speak English. I lived in a beautiful rent-stabilized loft on an unremarkable corridor of Lower Broadway, known for its retail jean stores that pumped out a wallpaper of Hot 97 hits. I was finally living the New York life I wanted. I was recently married and had just finished writing a book. There was no reason for me to be depressed. But any time I was happy, the fear of an awful catastrophe would follow. So I made myself feel awful to preempt the catastrophes hitting. Overtaxed by this anxiety, I sank into a deep depression. A friend said that when she was depressed, she felt like a sloth that fell from its tree. An apt description. I was dull, depleted, until I had to go out and interface with the public, and then I felt flayed. I decided to see a therapist to treat my depression. I wanted a Korean-American therapist because I wouldn't have to explain myself as much. She'd look at me and just know where I was coming from. Out of the hundreds of New York therapists available on the Aetna database of mental health care providers, I found exactly one therapist with a Korean surname. I left a message for her, and she called me back. We set up a consultation. Her small, dimly lit waiting room had a framed Diego Rivera poster of a kneeling woman holding a giant basket of calla lilies. The whole room was furnished in Rivera's tranquilizing palette, the brown vase of cattails, the caramel leather armchair, a rug the color of dying coral. The therapist opened her door. The first thing I noticed